Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Operation Gundog. This week's episode is episode 15, A Different Breed. And in this episode, we are talking with the one and only Rich Louder of Louder Creek Poodles. We'll kind of get into his background, but he's definitely been a great resource, and he's an awesome person that I like to look up to as far as the world of hunting poodles goes. And we'll get some information from him that not only pertains to you if you're training a hunting poodle on your own, but also if you're training a dog that just has a lot of similarities to that breed. So to kick us off, I'd like to go ahead and thank our sponsor, Dirty Duck Coffee. If you guys haven't tried them yet, we have a discount code for you to use. OGD15 gets you 15% off your order. Check them out. And without any further ado, Rich, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your kennel?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me on this evening. As you know, poodles are very important to me. Any chance I get to promote this absolutely wonderful breed, I'd certainly jump on that chance to do it. My name is Rich Louder. I have Louder Creek Retrievers and Gun Dogs. I'm a professional gun dog trainer and have been so for as long as I can remember. We train all different types of gun dogs and retrievers. Flushing dogs, pointing dogs, but primarily standard poodles for both waterfowl and upland bird hunting. To date, we've trained, at last count was over 250 standard poodles, both for competition and for the personal hunting dogs, and numerous other breeds as well. But standard poodles are what we do primarily.
Well, awesome. You mentioned you have a lot of experience in the gun dog world, both with standards and with a bunch of different breeds. Can you kind of expand on what are some ways that poodles are really unique?
Absolutely. Poodles are, generally speaking, a thinking breed. They just have a unique way about them. What I love about the breed is that, they're sometimes just completely silly dogs, just goofy animals. But when it comes time to work, if they're trained properly, they are all about it. They love what they do. I can't say enough good things about them. They do have their downside too from time to time. But for the most part, I would put them up against pretty much any breed.
So you definitely spoke about their thinking, they're intelligent dogs. Are there any other ways that they might be unique to other dogs, or do they respond in different ways? What are some other ways that they learn a little bit differently?
For instance, if you take a decently bred Labrador Retriever, and I say decently bred, it doesn't have to be FCA, FC bred, but a good bred dog. Those dogs love drills. You can drill them to death, and they're coming back for more. With poodles, it's not so much. What they like is they'll learn their task or learn what you're trying to teach them that day. When they think they've got it, that's it. They start thinking of other things to do. So a very active brain makes for some tough training, if that makes sense to you. They're constantly thinking of different things other than the task at hand, or how they can do it quicker, how they can do it better. Not always what you're looking for at that particular time, but they're going to certainly try.
Definitely. So you kind of mentioned it there some, but a field trial type lab and working poodles perform in different ways. What are some other examples of how training has to be different with them? There you kind of mentioned that drills, they don't live for drills in the same way that those labs do. So how does training look a little bit differently when you're working with a poodle versus one of those other breeds?
When working with poodles, you're constantly thinking of, you know, everybody has their way of training a dog, right? So with poodles, you're constantly thinking of changing it up a little bit, making it fit the dog that you've got in front of you. And what you should be doing anyway, regardless of breed, is training the dog that you've got in front of you. You know, poodles, they think, sometimes they think way too much about things rather than just going out and doing the task. They're thinking about it sometimes too much, you know. So you're constantly trying to have to outthink them, try different things. It's not a cookie cutter training, and that is for sure. There's really not one thing I can put my finger on that is different than what we do. Just seeing the number of poodles that we've seen, it just kind of comes naturally, you know. That's hard to put a finger on something like that.
Certainly. With my dog Sailor, one thing I've found is I feel like she's always searching for a challenge. It's always like, how can I challenge her a little bit more? But if I'm trying to get her to grasp a certain concept, how can I challenge her without it becoming too much of a testing moment versus training?
Yes, as with certain dogs, that we kind of have to make them feel like it was their idea, you know, if that makes sense to you. And therein lies the challenge. You know, you can force a dog to do almost anything you want, but I can tell you, when you try to force a poodle to do something that it doesn't want to do, it is not going to go good, and I can promise you that. Forcing a poodle to water generally is not going to work. You know, it'll get into water. Without a doubt, it's going to get into water, but it's going to look like it's been forced, if you know what I mean. It's going to have a tail tucked between its legs. It's going to have a real sulky body language. You can certainly tell when a poodle especially has been forced like that. And that's not my style. You know, if a dog does not want to do something, it doesn't want to be a hunting dog, I don't really want to go through the process of forcing it to do it. You know, it's got to be fun for the dog. It's got to be fun for us. You know, a dog's mental makeup means more to me than a ribbon or a title for that particular animal, you know. It's just not worth it for that dog to go through that process.
I think that's a great point. And also where you mentioned training the dog in front of you, that was actually one of the things that me and Dominic discussed as being the name of the episode, now that I think back. So with all that being said, it brings up a question that I had for you. Do you find yourself taking more of a British style approach with these dogs as opposed to, say, an American style approach, for instance, something like forced to water?
Yeah, right. And I don't know exactly what a British style is, you know, but I'm assuming it's a low pressure or no pressure style. I'll put some pressure on a dog. I'm not afraid of putting pressure on a dog, but I have to be 100% sure that dog knows what we're asking. Too many times now I see trainers that they go through that cookie cutter mentality, and they're not taking time to look at that dog's particular issues, and they resort to the forcing part of it as the first resort, you know. That should be your last resort, if any, if at all.
Do you think that kind of circles back to collar conditioning versus like making sure that dog understands what that stimulus is for versus like a cold burn, for example?
Oh, absolutely. You know, collar conditioning the right way has to be done regardless. We've done several, and I say several, probably 8 or 10 master hunter Labrador retrievers by the age of 2, never once put an e-collar on them. There are other ways to train dogs, but you have to have the right dog to start with. Now, talking about poodles, yes, we do collar condition them, but the forcing, force to pile, force to water stuff that goes on, I feel that that doesn't have to happen.
It's a tool, something that gets used, but not quite as often or only if it's needed.
Yeah, in my philosophy is, when dogs come to train here, I want to return to that owner the same happy-go-lucky dog that they dropped off, only now it has a set of skills. When you get into that forcing issue, I'm not saying it's wrong. A lot of people do it. I'm just saying that's not me. Because that dog is going to, like I said before, it's going to look seriously like it's been forced to water.
I think that goes across all breeds to a degree with the...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Force. You can really tell the difference in how a dog has been trained. You go to a hunt test and every dog off of this one guy's truck looks like it's got its tail tucked between its legs, and then the other guy, the dogs are bouncing around and happy, and it's an obvious difference.
That very much so. That's a very good observation on your part.
You kind of mentioned it there a little bit as well. If another professional trainer is working with a poodle, sometimes a poodle might exhibit something that a trainer's used to reading on a lab or a golden or a GSP and think of it as one particular issue. What are some other ways that more intelligent or even a softer dog can exhibit things that are mistranslated from somebody who's used to working with those flashier breeds?
Yeah. Sometimes, you're taking a nice field bred lab or golden, a lot of times their exuberance and their drive is going to get the job done for them. It's going to carry them a long way. You take a dog like a lot of poodles, pretty much every step sometimes has to be taught to the dog. Just the act of going out, picking up a bird, coming back and delivering it. With a traditional retriever, those things are hardwired into the dog. Pick something up, come back. Pick something up, come back. With a poodle, that's not quite the case. So you're teaching every single step of that process. And I'm talking in general terms. There's some poodles that just have a crazy retrieve drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, just absolute, and I've had them, those are fun dogs to work with. But there's also some that once they understand that they can go pick things up, come back and they get praised and loved on, that's a good thing. You're developing that skill. I'm not sure if that makes sense to you, but you can see that light bulb come on in their eyes, Oh gosh, all I have to do is go pick this object up, come back, and I get loved on. Dang, I'm not going to try that again and again and again. Mm-hmm. That's one of the differences in poodles, that whole teaching aspect. A lot of the steps that come natural for traditional dogs has to be taught to poodles.
And that's an interesting point, because I know I've heard people mention, there's a difference between teaching and training. We want to train, not teach. So I guess that would be one of the major differences between poodles, is that teaching is an aspect of training.
Oh, absolutely. And I tell my help that all the time. In fact, we just got a new poodle puppy that doesn't know how to sit. That's one of the first things that people teach a dog when they, puppy, when they get home, is teach a dog how to sit, right? Walk on, lead and sit. Mm-hmm. So this dog doesn't know that. So he was trying, you know, what he's been doing for hundreds of dogs, you know. I said, look, this dog doesn't know that. You got to teach it. You got to teach it how to sit, you know, gosh. So it was kind of an eye opener to me. Out of all these dogs, that particular dog is, golly, here's a dog that has to be taught how to sit at this age. It's crazy.
Right. Whenever I think of poodles, and I think a lot of people that at least whenever they first hear of a hunting poodle, they don't have just a huge overview of what a hunting poodle is like. And most people that I talk to hunting poodles about refer to the Duck Dynasty episode with Cy and his poodle. So I want to ask you a little bit about, I guess, that poodle, but also who is your most accomplished poodle? Which of your poodles is the most accomplished? And also, would you have considered he or she to be a softer dog?
Well, that is a good question. And that particular dog that was on Duck Dynasty, a dog named Cooper, AKC Master Hunter, Hunting Retriever Champion, Upland Hunter, a NARA Master Hunter, Upland Gun Dog Association Advanced Title, just a dog that's titled to the max and all that stuff. Just a fantastic working dog. In fact, I probably shouldn't do it, but I kind of compare every other dog that we've trained since him to him, you know. Right. And I shouldn't do that, but every once in a while you see sparks of these little puppies, you know, some of the things that they do that really remind me of him. So as far as titles and ability, he probably would be my top dog. But as far as a pure hunting dog, that would be my dog Reba, who just recently passed away. From a pure hunting standpoint, my goodness, there was no better dog on the planet as far as I'm concerned. As far as waterfowl, you know, upland birds, she's hunted with me forever, you know. But as far as a title dog, Cooper was it. But from a pure hunting standpoint, it had to be Reba. But we've got some up-and-coming youngsters now. We've got a male named Clapton who probably a better upland dog, one of the better upland dogs that I've seen and had a chance to hunt with, honestly, as far as the flushing dog goes. That's a tough question.
Yeah, absolutely.
It depends which way you look at it.
Are these other dogs, Reba and Clapton, coming from, you know, your kennel, or is it hard to find, you know, hunting poodles outside of your kennel?
Well, Reba, like I said, she just passed on. She was 13 plus years old. She came from a kennel that had virtually no hunting in their background at all. She just had that knack, and my wife picked her out of a litter. But you know how it is that the puppies just kind of tell them that I'm the one to pick, you know.
Right.
That was Reba when she picked her out of the litter. And Cooper came from a non-hunting background as well. We just got super lucky, I guess. But Clapton is one that we bred. He's also a breed champion as well. So he got a when I say breed champion, I'm talking about in a show ring. So he's put together extremely nicely. Has that goofy little attitude sometimes that I love about poodles. But when it comes time to for hunting, he just turns the game on.
So you mentioned a couple of those dogs, and this is the case with any breed where there's occasionally a dog that has a softer personality or a softer pressure response, or even a response to, you know, any sort of verbal no. Do you find that with poodles that's more common or about the same commonality as with other breeds as far as how often it happens?
I would say it's more common with poodles. You know, I can get more out of a verbal correction than I can a collar correction or a heeling stick correction. You know, the word N-O means more to dogs, my dogs anyway, than pretty much anything else. And you know, and this goes back to with lab training as well. You know, a high drive dog, if you take away that retrieve from them, you deny them that, gosh, you can mold them into anything you want. You know, I find that to be an extremely effective tool. And especially when it comes to steadying a dog, you know, gosh, we had one dog here that I can remember that he had a braking issue, would not sit still. So we denied him retrieves for 6 weeks. I mean, he saw every mark, but by golly, if he moved a muscle, he was put up and not gotten able to pick anything up. And he learned his lesson. We ended up putting a master title on him shortly after that. So, you know, and that's similar to the N-O word, right? You know, you deny them something and they'll do anything to get it.
Right. Mm-hmm. That goes back to training the dog in front of you. And in that case, you know, you had a dog that loved to retrieve. And so he, I guess over the time, the 6 weeks, he realized that if I'm going to retrieve, I'm going to have to sit back a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So with that being said, what do you have any tips that are kind of poodle specific, but they can also apply to dogs of any breed that are a little bit softer or like a poodle that their intelligence is just kind of too much at times? What would some of your tips be for working with a dog that has that type of personality? Right.
Well, one of the things that I do differently than I would think most trainers is train both sides of hunting. We'll train upland dogs right along with retrievers. You know, we'll cross train these dogs, and I find I get really good results with that. You take a dog that has limited drive, you know, and lack of concentration sometimes, and you see their morale start to go down in some other dogs. We'll plant a bunch of live birds out in the field and let them have at it, and you can just see they're carrying themselves a lot differently. They've got a whole new respect for themselves, and it just does wonders for their psyche. And I'm not, I don't know if other people do it or not, but it really works well for me.
So that's another thing you've mentioned. You said it at the beginning of the episode and you kind of touched on it there. You mentioned you do cross training. You train between waterfowl and upland. And you said it had some benefits for the dog other than that boost of confidence and that kind of reignition of that drive in them. Do you see any other benefits to the dog or the owner for that cross training? What are some more reasons that even a self trainer like me or somebody else out there would want to cross train?
Sure. Dog? Well, most people that I train dogs for are hunters, right? They're not interested in titles or ribbons or anything like that. They want a dog that's going to hunt for them. They may go out to Arkansas and hunt ducks a couple weekends a season. They may go up to North Dakota or South Dakota to hunt pheasants, you know, a couple times a year. They don't need two dogs. They want one dog that can do both. So from the dog's perspective, I feel like it increases their want to be out there, you know. From a retrieving aspect, if you're shooting a bird that sails across into the cattails, and an upland dog has a much better chance of finding that bird. You know, they're going to, you know, scrounge around there and root them out. I think you would find you have an all around better dog if you do that. And I'm not saying to do it all the time, just once in a while. you know, dogs get tired, and especially poodles, I feel like they get tired of having to be by your side all the time and be under your control all the time. They need some freedom once in a while. In fact, I had two dogs this week. You could just get a little sense that, you know, they're carrying themselves a little bit differently. You know, they got tired of being by my side, trying to be steady. You know what? Let's go throw some birds out in the field. And you know what? They rooted them out. We shot them. Then we went back to some retriever work with them. Man, they were sat nicely. You can tell, especially with a poodle, the way he's when he's at heel, watching marks go down. And you know, their chest starts puffing out a little bit. You know what I'm talking about? You can tell when a dog is marking birds, when they're sitting there and they see a bird go down, they just kind of stand a little more erect for each bird that falls. It's a beautiful thing for me to see that.
That kind of goes back to what you mentioned before. All work and no play can work for some of those other breeds, but those poodles kind of do need that that ability to, you know, let themselves go and have a little fun.
Poodles they're like that, you know. They want to please you badly, even if it's just sitting on the couch. You know, they want to be part of what you're doing. You know, whether it's going for a walk in the woods or, you know, walking through fields or picking up birds for you, they want to be part of that. They want to please. They've got a crazy desire to please you.
I have one more question with the upland, since we're kind of on that topic. You mentioned you train poodles as flushers. Have you had a poodle that points?
That's a good topic. Poodles are classified as a flushing breed. So we participate in AKC Spaniel Hunt Test, which is a flushing dog test. In the breed standard, it says poodles are allowed to give you a flash point, which I'm not sure what a flash point means, you know, what the time is, 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, whatever. But a lot of poodles will do that. It seems to me like they're trying to figure out a way to get that bird before it flushes. You know, they're kind of, you can see, and I've watched them from the front of the dog. I'll have my handler run the dog, and I'll be in front of it. You can watch that dog's eyes as it's looking for that bird. His head will turn a little bit. And so they're not actually pointing. They're thinking. Absolutely. So it's kind of a weird thing. There's some of them that will do it for a longer time, you know, and they'll get thrown out of a flushing dog test.
Wow. That I only ask because there's one time me and Sailor were walking in my neighborhood, and it's like a dirt road neighborhood. And we got woods all around us, and a dove flew right across the road. I guess we flushed off the side of the road, and then she runs to where the dove came from, which I'm thinking she's, you know, that's just a dog's reaction. Oh, if one came from there must be more. And she kind of slammed on point looking up. It's like, yeah, that's where the bird came from. And I walked over by her, and sure enough, there was another dove sitting in the tree. And when I got next to her, the thing flew off. So I didn't know if, you know, that's a common thing with the poodles, but I can definitely understand how maybe that's just her thinking how I can climb this tree.
Well, you know, the pointing is not a desirable trait in that game, but from a hunting standpoint, it's not a bad thing. You know, it's actually kind of good. It gives you a second to get ready, you know. So, but you know, it's fun, man. The whole spaniel stuff. To me, it's a poodle's natural game. You know, the flushing dog part of it. They still have to be under control. You still have to keep them in gun range. They still have to make a retrieve. They've got to make a water retrieve. It's tailor-made for poodles.
Question I had was about, you know, you've been breeding for a while, and I guess I'm trying to understand if you just kind of accept that softness to be a little bit a part of your breeding. But when choosing your breeding, for your in your kennel, what attributes are you more likely to breed for? And would you try to breed out like softness to a degree for a good nose or marking ability, or is softness just kind of something that you're sort of accepting?
Well, I don't want to say not accepting the softness. That's just part of what a poodle is.
Right.
You know, it's not something that is bred for or bred out. You know, that's just part of what a poodle is.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let that softness, don't be mistaken by that. You know, they are a tough, tough dog. Case in point, this last week I was in South Dakota hunting, you know, pretty cold weather. And my young dog, Brandy, she shined. I mean, she grew up a lot on that trip. And I don't want to say anything about a breed, but there was a Labrador Retriever that was hunting with his group that I was in. And it's a two-year-old lab. You know, they should be able to be picking up ducks pretty good in water, regardless of temperature at that age. Refused to go, you know, break a little bit of sheet ice to pick a belly-up duck outside of decoys. Would not go. I lined Brandy up, dead bird back, chomp, 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 picked it up and come back. That was a proud moment for me. You know, so poodles, you know, the word soft is kind of a misconstrued, I think, with poodles. I've been witness to a couple of poodle fights, and there is nothing more fierce than a poodle bitch fighting. I guarantee it. That's the worst thing I've ever seen is a poodle fight.
So. My in-laws and family that I married into since we got Sailor, they all ended up going back to our breeder and get puppies cool. from her because they liked my dog so much. And so there are some that's poodle awesome. Play dates. And I've never seen dogs play fight as rough as poodles.
You got to watch them. You got to be careful with them sometimes. But you know, one thing that we breed for first and foremost is health of the animals. You know, the health testings have got to be done on both the sire and dams. You know, we place puppies in homes and those people, you know, they get really attached to the dogs like we do. You know, I would feel horrible if something we could have prevented happened to a dog that we put in a home. You know, and one of the other things more important than that is the temperament of the dogs. You know, the temperament is very important. Look, our hunting season is, what, a couple of months out of the year? You've got 10 more months out of the year to live with a dog. So temperament's got to be right. You know, there are some lines that have some aggression issues that you really have to be aware of that.
You kind of mentioned you don't think softness is the right word for the dog. So you think sensitive would be a better word or worse?
Probably lean towards they're a little more cautious. You know, a poodle's DNA is more closely related to a wolf than pretty much every other dog breed. Okay. So if you think about a wolf's demeanor, and I know people that have studied wolves in the wild for a long time, they are extremely cautious animals. If something happens on a path that they're going, they are never going to go down that path again, right? And so if you think about a poodle, how a poodle acts, if something happens to them in a piece of water or, you know, whatever, you know, crossing a fence or something, if something happens, it's tough to get them back into that area. You know, if they're swimming and there's some, you know, stick ups or something under the surface of the water and they get startled by it, man, that's tough for a poodle to overcome sometimes. You know, it's just that they're very cautious and it's all about survival. When you think about a wolf, their job is to survive from day to day to day. If something happens to hinder that survival, they're going to remember it. And that, so if you think about that one piece of information, that kind of explains how a poodle acts. Does that make sense to you?
I think that's a great summary, and it definitely paints the picture.
So when I learned that one fact, man, that opened up my eyes tremendously on why poodles do certain things. Why do they do this when the lab's just going to charge right through? You know, they're just very cautious like that, mm-hmm. and it goes back to that whole survival gene.
It's funny you say that, because I was just talking to John, I think yesterday, about phylogeny of all dog breeds. And we're looking at the phylogenetic, it's like a wheel, and it shows you, you know, the common ancestor, and it starts to spiral out. Well, the closer you are to that center spiral, the closer you are to the ancient dog breeds, the original dogs. And poodles are, you know, towards that point of origin for domestic dogs.
Yeah, we have and drawings of poodles from the 1400s. You know, they've been around a long, long time. And to me, that's an amazing fact about that breed. I just can't say enough good things about them. You know, they are a challenge to train. You really have to think about what you're doing. You know, I'm a goal-oriented person. You know, I have monthly goals for dogs, weekly goals, and daily goals. There's a lot of times when I don't accomplish them goals, you know, because, things happen in that dog's day, you know. But I have no problem taking a step back in taking care of those little holes. You know, I have no problem doing that.
One thing I've heard before, because I try to put myself in Sailor's perspective, try to think from inside of her head when I'm trying to solve a problem or figure out why she did X, Y, or Z on a setup. And I'll come to what I think the conclusion is. And some of my more senior experienced trainers, whether they be amateur or professional, I'll say, you know, I think this is why she did that. And they're like, man, you know, you're giving that dog too much credit. And, you know, I think that, I don't know if that's the case, because like we kind of mentioned, poodles think in such a way that maybe another dog might not think that way, but their intelligence kind of rises to that.
Yeah, that's a very true statement. You know, that when, and you can see it. Well, that dog Cooper, for instance, you know, one of the poodles generally are very good marking dogs, you know, generally speaking. You know, you have some that are not. They have to be taught, you know, but generally speaking, poodles mark very well. That's their given talent, you know. The other part, you know, teaching blinds and all that, you really have to think about how you teach that stuff. You know, it goes back to the whole drill thing. You know, they think they know everything, and then they just stop performing. You know, gosh, I had a dog named Layla who was the Hunter Retriever champion and up and hunter, all that kind of stuff. You know, I taught her tea very quickly. You know, just a matter of a couple of weeks, she was done. So I normally will keep pushing dogs on tea. You know, but gosh, once she learned it, it looked like, you know, she didn't want to be there anymore. It's just the weirdest thing. I thought she was just washed up. She just didn't want to do it anymore. And so I learned a lot from that dog as far as not overdoing drill stuff, you know. But then that dog Cooper, mm-hmm. you know, he just run those things till his legs fall off. You know, he trained more like a lab than any poodle I've ever seen.
Do you think that kind of goes back to, a lot of people say you train a fast dog slow and a slow dog fast? Do you think it's almost like poodles, you have to train them fast, otherwise
they get bored very quickly? So you have to, another thing I wanted to mention, you just have to pick your battles with them too. You know, and that should be with any dog, and most of your good trainers know that. You know, you just pick your battles. You know, during the hunting season, you know, if they're skirting a piece of water or whatever, they don't come around a hill, I don't care. Just go get my bird and come back. That's all I care about when we're hunting. You know, if you're not quartering properly, I don't care. Just find me a bird and put it up, you know. So now, now it's time to those two dogs I took on this latest trip. I got to clean up some issues, but you know, hunting is hunting, but testing is different. So you have to ask yourself what your priorities are. If your goal is to build a hunting retriever champion or a master hunter, yeah, you got to be a little more precise in your training. But if you're just looking for a dog that's going to pick up birds for you, you know, your blinds don't have to be exact. You know, as long as you can get into the area and let them take over from there, that's good enough for hunting.
Another question I wanted to ask is, you know, you're talking about a well-bred poodle versus, we'll say, a well-bred lab. Do you feel like the timetable of training a dog up to, like, say, a master hunter or finished level, do you feel like it's comparable, or do you think that you know, say a poodle would take just a little longer? Or I'm sure you have kind of a you know, a different plan as far as that goes. And how does that look?
Yeah, generally you can get most labs, I would say, between the age of 2 and 4, depending on how much training you're putting in. You can put a master hunter title if the dog's bred decently enough and, you know, all the right steps have been followed. With a poodle, I'm guessing probably about the age of 4, you should be able to start running finish tests or master level tests. By 4, they should be pretty well accomplished in, you know, running blinds and all that kind of stuff.
Working with a local trainer that I go out and drill with quite often, he kind of mentioned to me that with the breed that I'm running, I'm looking at more of a 5-year plan versus like a 2-year plan that you'd have with a lab. Do you kind of agree with that statement?
I would say that's pretty accurate. And your dog looks really good. How old is Sailor now?
Sailor just turned a year back in August. Well,
she's right on target. She's looking pretty sharp. I don't see any reason why she shouldn't be running, you know, upper level stuff, you know, next year, maybe. You know, I haven't seen her run blinds yet, but by the age of 4, definitely running finished level stuff, or even master level stuff. I think that's well within that dog's grasp.
I think one of the parts that's going to slow progress is I've mentioned on this podcast before, and I think we were just talking about on the previous episode how she kind of has some things we're working through with water. We're continuing to build water confidence, but she's wanting to kind of flare at the water's edge and square herself up to the mark and things like that. So we're kind of working on that. And one solution we've kind of found with her is to square her up to the bird, but to pull off of the bank. And it's almost like she gets momentum going towards it on the land because she is very confident in land. And that kind of pushes her into the water and doesn't make her have enough time to think about what the best way to get in is.
That's a very good concept to work on. And you will find that type of a setup in a master level test, or even sometimes a senior level test. You're running off the bank, you know, 20 yards or so, 30 yards. You're going to see that pretty frequently. And there's drills that will certainly help that. You know, what I'll do, you know, we're teaching angle entry stuff. You pick a spot or a rock or something on the bank at that angle. Anything past that, you know, you give them the benefit of the doubt. Anything past that particular point, call her back, move up a step or two. And again, we're just using attrition at this point. There's no collar pressure until later on. And eventually she's going to get the idea. She's not going to pick that bird up until she's going in the water where you want her to. It's just a lot of repetition.
And do you think with that attrition you mentioned, Do you think it's one of those things that I just need to do a better job of just getting her in the water, period? And once that confidence is, you know, to an elevated point like her land is, that's when I can start calling her back. Because if I call her back too early, that might be her saying that I'm turning her off of the water.
Her being only about a year old, that's a little too early to start that type of a drill. Are you planning on hunting with the dog this winter? Or?
Me and John actually have a hunting trip coming up next weekend off of the Mississippi.
Oh, nice. Okay. I use a lot of live pigeons in the water to really build that prey drive. If she's got plenty of prey drive, it really gets them water friendly, or live pigeons in water do wonders. You know, I think you can't use enough of them.
That's funny you say that. I was actually talking to my local trainer and I was like, you know, I wonder if giving her a squirming, flapping target in the water would, you know, really push her to get in, that she's not going to think about what's the best way for me to get in. It's going to be that prey switch is going to flip on and say, let me just go get this.
Absolutely. And I think that would do most poodles wonders, you know, but they have to have that prey drive in them, you know, and then that goes back to breeding.
And that's actually something that helped me. It was the week before the hunt test I ran her in last month. For some reason, I got it in my head that, you know, this, let me fix this non-square entry deal she had going on. And so I knowed her off of water just a couple of times and tried to recent her.
There you go.
And I tried to send her on another mark and she just looked at me and kind of no-goed. Yeah. And the trainer I was with that day was like, let me try something. And he picked up a shackled duck, threw it in the water, and off she went. And that was kind of the reinforcement she needed. Like, she had her prey drive is definitely there, and it's something I can always turn to help fix something that I break in training. And that it was fun to watch those gears turn, because we just threw it out there and, you know, let it swim, let it dive on her, had her swimming in circles around it and flapping and getting just out of reach 100 times. And she never gave up on that bird. It was coming back.
Perfect. That's perfect. So, you know, you use those little tools to your advantage, you know, later in her training, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, she's just a year old. So it probably slow down on some of the more drilled type things, you know, just solidify all those basic things, solidify. And really right now, there should be no angle entries, a year old poodle, you know, just square up that bank, you know, work on the angle stuff later on.
That's definitely something I'll keep in mind.
Yeah. You know, you want all that water. Everything about water's got to be good, you know, especially for poodles. You know, labs don't care. It's, you know, if there's a bird over there, they're going to get in and get it. But poodles have to, they've got to build that confidence in water. And like I said, you know, if you just square up a bank, make it, you know, run from a distance away from the water's edge, you know, 20 yards, 30 yards, whatever, like you said, she's got a head of steam going at that point already, and she's likely to jump in at some point.
Well, I definitely appreciate that advice. And you mentioned you haven't seen her run on blinds, and she started to get some foundational work in blinds, but then I signed her up for the started hunt test, and I said that, you know, that doesn't matter right now. And haven't really done blinds with her since. I've been working on, you know, building that water confidence and just running her on marks. So I don't know. Do you think that's on par, you know, continue to build that confidence and then worry about blinds later?
Yeah, you can start that whole process. You know, you can start that, you know, teaching blind process as little puppies. And there's certain things that we'll do. If I know we're going to keep a puppy out of a breeding, or if someone wants, you know, if we're going to keep the dog long enough to run upper level stuff, we start that process right away. And there's a couple little drills that you can do. It's just the basic pile stuff, super basic pile. Little puppies that want to retrieve so badly, gosh, you can get them to do almost anything at that age.
So kind of like the rudimentary directional fetch or the directional place or things like that?
No. What I've done in the past is they're super low cut grass, almost like a golf course cut grass. Just white bumpers out there, big pile of them. Start 10 yards and then, move back, a couple of paces as she's going out to them, dead bird back. It's just building that muscle response, muscle memory. When you say back, she's just going to go. She ain't going to go straight all the time, or, the little puppy's just going to wander around out there a little bit. They're going to find it, but after two or three of them, dead bird back, they're going right to it, coming back. And, they just eat up the praise at that point. Good puppy. Just love on them all you can. They're going to go back out and get another one. It only takes 5 minutes a day to start that whole process, and little mm-hmm. puppies, nature walks. Gosh, I love nature walks for puppies. You take them and you just go out in the field and let them smell deer poop or rabbit poop or whatever, taste it. they're going to eat it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Goose poop.
So, yeah. Oh, that's the worst. Yeah. Goose poop.
That's awesome. My dog's jam right there.
Oh, Lord.
I keep chicken, so Sailor's favorite snack is the little chicken pies that are all hard.
You pay for that later down the road the next morning or something, that's for sure. nature walks, I love them, especially when the grass gets a little bit taller, out in the fields. And this goes back to upland hunting. We're teaching that dog how to hunt and how to check in with you. You see, as a puppy gets older, you're letting it go off and it's going to, smell something. When you see it going in a direction, you walk in the complete other direction, toot them in with a whistle. They don't know what whistle means at that point, but they're learning something, by golly, and eventually, mm-hmm. eventually you don't have to teach that whistle. They already know it. It's kind of cool how that all works. You're just building that muscle memory and that response reflex.
It's kind of like you're planting seeds in them and, the pieces all come together. Yeah, absolutely. Eventually.
Yep. Yeah. Nature walks is something that I'll do with a, 7-week-old puppy, 8-week-old puppy. They're most of the time they're underneath your feet, as they get older, they try to get away from me a little bit. And gosh, I use that to my advantage every day.
Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about poodles. I can tell poodles are your favorite breed, but if somebody told you couldn't have a poodle, but you could have any other dog breed, what would that be?
Oh my goodness. That's a tough one. We've had so many good dogs of different breeds around. I started out with golden retrievers. So there is a soft spot for goldens, still, but right now, if I couldn't have a poodle, it would probably be a poodle pointer, one of the versatile breeds. Man, what a mm-hmm. stout dog they are! Again, if they're bred right, great pointing dogs. I don't know if you've had much experience with some pointing dogs, but the good ones, man, it is a beautiful thing to watch.
I always think it's the coolest thing to watch some of those, some of the videos of, GSPs or wire hairs working in the field, and you just see them going 100 miles an hour back and forth, and they just slam.
Point. It's something that just it catches your breath sometimes when you see it. It's just an amazing thing to see. Poodle pointers are good, but I've got a little dog here now. The first one that we've had is called a Brac Francais, which is a French pointer. Just a smaller version of a GSP. A little thing, a little female. Kind of meek and mild in the kennel, but when she's out in the field, oh my goodness, it is really cool to see. So I'm kind of liking that dog, but you know, as far as a dog that I would have for myself, if it wasn't a poodle, it'd probably be a poodle pointer.
Gotcha. Do you work much with Boykins up there?
I've had a few of them. Not one of my favorite breeds. I know guys that specialize in training Boykins, and they're very good at it. Let's leave it at that. They're good at training Boykins.
They're definitely a unique breed. I've watched a bunch of them run, and they're something.
Well, put it this way: in all the years I've been training dogs, I've only been bit twice. Both of them have been by Boykins. But I love them. I just was helping a friend of mine who's on the sheriff's department here in our county. He's got a little Boykin. I helped him with that dog. And that dog was bred by Pam Cadlick over in South Carolina. And that is a nice, nice dog. I was really pleased to be able to work with him. He turned out to be a really nice finished dog.
So I had one more question for you. As far as titling dogs, you have a lot of experience within the hunt test arenas. I've never seen anything, any record anywhere of a poodle meeting a grand hunt retriever champion level. What might be the reason there? Is it just because no one's tried, or do you think there's you know, other things that take focus away that a poodle should be working towards? Or what do you think the reason behind that is?
I don't think anybody has tried. It's a legitimate goal. It's a long process to make a grand hunting retriever champion. There's no doubt in my mind that Cooper could have gone there. Layla, she was a HRCH, probably the best blind running dog that I've had. Just precise blind, you know, handled like a sports car. She could have gotten there, and a lot of it is about the obedience part of it. You know, your dog's got to walk perfectly at heel. You know, that kind of stuff that's not really up my alley. You know. I don't know. It's just not my thing.
Do you think the timetable we kind of talked about earlier with poodles plays a factor in that?
Well, to make an HRCH poodle, you're on that 4 to 5 year time frame. Depending on what kind of foundation you put into the dog, add another year maybe. You know, I would say 5 to 6 year old dog that probably capable of doing it. Any dog can run the grand, you know, as long as it's got a HRCH, but passing it's another thing.
Well, I think, John, what do you think? Do I have any?
Hey, man, somebody's going to do it eventually, man. Why not you?
I've been saying it since day one. I'm going to be that dog's limiting factor.
Well, sounds like you're on the right track. You know, you're looking at it from the right angle anyway. You know, you said it's just going to be persistence. And that's with any self-trained dogs. It's got to be, you have to be consistent in your training. You have to know what your goals are. If your goal is to be a grand hunting retriever champion, man, if you reach that goal, hats off to you. Or if your goal is just to have a nice hunting dog, that's fantastic. You know, the good thing is, and it sounds like that you have a goal for that dog, and that's good enough. You know, if you've got that goal, that's perfect.
I think my goal has always been a little ambiguous for her. My goal, I've kind of set it out, I guess it would be my mission statement when working with her, is to equip her with all the skills to be the best dog she can possibly be.
And that's perfect. You know, I feel like you'll make that HRCH with her if you keep on this path, you know. And it sounds like you've got some good sound advice in your circle of training people. Just be careful of advice from some other people, you know, be careful of, you know, take advice and running with it. You know, everybody's got their opinion of how to train a dog. You know, you have to know what your training style is. And I'd give this advice to anybody. You have to know what your training style is, what your dog is capable or not capable of mentally or physically. And just run with it.
I appreciate that advice, and I think that advice is definitely useful to anyone who might be listening too. Opinions are like you know what, everyone has one.
Well, that's right. You know, most of my friends are trainers. You know, they tell me, you know, I'm not going to fool with a poodle. I'm just not going to do it. They don't have the time to do it. They don't. They certainly have the know-how, but they just lack the patience that it takes. You know, and that's one thing. It sounds like you have the patience to deal with some of the things that poodles are going to present to you.
Well, I think that answers most of my questions. This is Rich. I know we've gotten to talk over the phone and via text a few times. I always greatly appreciate your time and your insight. It helps me as a trainer. It helps my dog. So I really do appreciate all that. John, did you have any other questions?
No, man. I think you answered everything. Rich. I think that was perfect. I have like just a newfound appreciation, and I want to train a poodle now. I don't know that I could do it justice, but I.
Well, you probably can. You know, to me, it's about patience, and I didn't bring that up until the end of our conversation or towards the end of our conversation. That patience is certainly a virtue when it comes to training poodles, you know, because they will try you. They're going to embarrass you sometimes, but man, they're going to certainly make you proud sometimes too.
That reminds me, I was running Sailor on Tuesday, I think it was, and there's a drone. I was able to get some footage of her running, and the phone I had in my hand that I was operating the drone with was the microphone. And I ran her on like probably a 90-yard mark out in the middle of a hayfield, and she absolutely stepped on it. Like it was one of those where usually I see it more often with labs where they're just going so hard. They're about two steps past the bumper or the bird, and then they realize it's back there, and they kind of tear up some grass when they put the brakes on, pick it up, and come right back. And she did that same thing with that mark. Awesome. And the person who was working on some honoring behind me was like, man, that dog is just a beast. And I tooted her in, turned back to that person and said, I know, she makes me proud. And then turned around and ran like 120-yard mark. And she went out there, hunted, picked it up, and came right back. And they're just like, man, that dog's awesome.
That's good, man. I love to hear that. But just keep those moments in your memory bank, because there's going to come a time where, and if you've trained enough dogs, there's going to come a time when you're going to be thoroughly embarrassed by a dog. It doesn't matter if it's a lab, golden, chessy, whatever. They're going to embarrass you, and they're going to make you extremely proud.
Definitely. I had a little bit of embarrassment that first hunt test the first day. She no-good me on the water part. She marked better than some of the dogs on land, but when it came to water, she just kind of looked at me like, you know, what's this? I've never seen this before in my life. And of course we were like the third dog to run, everybody sitting behind us watching us, and turned out like half the dogs failed that setup, but we were the first one to fail that setup.
Oh, goodness. So, well, let me tell you, my very first hunt test, my wife and I, we went to watch an Old South test. And we watched it started level test, and I'm thinking, well, dang, my dog can do that, right? You know, there's nothing. There's a big splash, you know, ducks floating right there. And so we signed up for the next test, which was up in Music City. There's always a big test up there. So the first duck goes down, and I send him. He is running all over creation. Like the duck is sitting right there, right? And he's running all over the darn place. He goes behind the holding blind and finds the bird boy's bucket of birds and pulls one out of there. I was like, good Lord. So, of course, we were out, though. That was my very first hunt test with a poodle. I was like, holy crap. So, you know, you're going to be embarrassed like that. If you're training dogs or running hunt tests, things are going to happen. So, but don't let things discourage you. You just got to keep on pushing on. It makes you a better trainer, that's for sure.
Well, I'll definitely keep that in mind. We did that with day two. It was hard. Egg was still dripping down my face. And we went out there, and she crushed it. She crushed land. She crushed water. Everyone started clapping. I don't know if it was condescending or if they were genuinely happy for me, but they started clapping when we finished water. And I was just beaming. I was happy with my little poodle. Awesome. And, you know, it's one of those things that I knew she had it in her. I was just, you know, are you ready to show everyone here that you got it? And she was.
So are you planning on running some AKC events too? Or
I might. One thing, I talked to John, and we have a couple episodes planned for anyone that might still be listening. We plan to do an AKC versus HRC episode. We kind of discussed the stepwise fashion that it almost seems like the rigor of hunt test goes started, junior, seasoned, senior, and then finished, and then master is kind of the way difficulty seems to continue on up. And so I was thinking, you know, maybe I'll do started and then I'll bump over to junior, or another idea that me and John were talking about with our own personal dogs is, why not get our dog to the finish level and then switch over and go straight to master, since the dog's equipped with all the skills to run finished. Just try to go straight to master.
Yeah, that's any way you run them. There's a few differences, but, you know, y'all can talk about all that. But really, if it's just for people that just want a hunting dog, a seasoned level dog or a senior level dog, you can hunt with them dogs, you know, and have a good time, you know, because they can handle pretty decently. They're gonna be pretty much steady, you know. So if you have those two levels, or the dog can run that level of setups, then I think they're ready to hunt.
But in short, to answer your question, yeah, I'm probably going to continue to put some titles on her. We're three passes away from started, so good. We'll go that route. And like I said, I'm just going to try to equip her and see how far she can go.
That's perfect. And set your goals high. You know, that's what I always say. Set them goals high.
Grand Retriever champion it is.
Well, hats off to you if you can get there. Man, that'd be wonderful.
Well, we'll certainly strive for it. We'll see. We'll let the chips lie where they might. Thank you again, Rich. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your knowledge. And, you know, I learn something new about my own breed every time I talk to you. So it's always enlightening, and I do appreciate it.
Well, like I said, I appreciate the opportunity to promote this breed. You know, they've afforded us a nice living, and I get a chance to fool around with dogs every single day of my life, and I owe all that to poodles.
Do you have a Instagram or any other social media pages that you would like to throw out there for any of our listeners that
might want to go follow? Sure, Louder Creek Retrievers and Gun Dogs on Facebook. They can, whoever's interested can like that page and see some not only poodles but other breeds. And there's a Louder Creek on Instagram too. They can look at some pictures and things on there. We are around for anybody who has questions about poodles. I answer questions pretty much every day from different people, and not only poodles that we've bred and trained, but you know, people that have poodles. You know, we get calls from people all over the world, really, about poodles. In fact, I got one today from somebody. So it's kind of a unique position that we're in. But like I said, whenever we get a chance to promote this breed, we certainly do.
I'm right there with you. I love bringing a poodle to a hunt test. I mean, I've only been to one, but I love, you know, being the only poodle in started that weekend. It was pretty fun, and people always ask about her. So
absolutely. Well, you know, the pressure's on when you bring a poodle to the line. They've got to perform. But it's fun regardless. You know, it's a lot of fun. But, you know, just
certainly
the training, the day-to-day training and everything, that's what I enjoy. You know, it used to be the running the hunt tests every weekend. But now I seriously get more thrill out of these little light bulb moments in young dogs that we've got. You know, when they accomplish the task for the first time, you can see the little light bulb go off in their heads. Like, man, and my wife would tell you, I'll come in for dinner and just say, God, you see, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that, and first time for this, first time for that. It's a pretty cool part of my day.
That's funny you say that. I get excited over that stuff, too. That's like calling your mom to come watch you jump off the diving board or something, but...
That's right. Yeah. Well, I'll call her and say, "Come on out. Well, you got to see this." And of course, it doesn't happen again. So
it's like taking your car into the shop and never makes the same noise.
Yeah, that's right. But that's what keeps me going every day. You know, we train hard here, but those things really keep me going and energized for the next day.
Thank you again. With all that, I think it's time that me and John jump into our our less interesting updates. Me personally, like I mentioned, I've been running Sailor. She's looking sharp on land. I'm really enjoying it. I've gotten a lot of compliments about her this past week that she's been just marking lights out, and she's been looking great, and coming to water, she's coming into herself a little bit more confidence there. So that's fun to see. One thing for an update with the podcast in general, for those of you that are still listening, we have been running now for 15 weeks. Every Friday we've aired an episode, and next week is going to be the first week that there will not be an episode on Friday. And do not worry, you can still hear our voices because we're going to be doing an Instagram Live on Saturday down with Parrish Waterfowl Company. Me and John will be down there together along with Brad, who you guys have heard speak on episode 11 Pound Dog. And we're also going to be down there with TSS Shot Shells. And we'll be doing some hunting down in Louisiana along the Mississippi Flyway. So we'll be airing an Instagram Live on Saturday evening. Other than that, I don't think I have many exciting updates for this past week, but continuing to work with Sailor. John, what about you?
I won't go into all the dogs, but I will go into Bonnie. So last weekend we got to run our first season hunt test. And so really our goal for this season was to get through started and the next hunt test season kind of jump into seasoned. But, you know, we've been busting our butt for a little while, and so I figured I'd give her a shot right here at the end of the hunt test season. And we tried out seasoned, and Bonnie did great. Me, on the other hand, had to kind of get used to the, you know, the handling for the seasoned level. So our first test was a land series, and what was presented to us was a little bit tighter of a blind to the marks than I guess I had kind of like been told to expect. And so with the blind, she sort of with each cast kind of was peeling, suctioning off to the towards a previous fall mark. And so one of the things mentioned from the judge before the test was, hey, I don't want your dog to go to the right downwind from the blind.
And so she peeled off to the right just enough to not pass the land series. I kind of learned that my left angle backs were probably not the best casts in that situation. I probably should have thrown in some overs when I continually threw the same cast, and she kind of gave me the same response. I made some adjustments. They did still let me run water later in the evening, and she did pass the water series, but due to her land performance, did not get the pass for the day. The next day, Sunday, she did end up passing the land and the water series, so we kind of redeemed ourselves a little bit. I figured things out a little bit more, what the judges were looking for. It's one of those things that, you know, you can get told so much about a test, but until you actually experience it, there's just some kind of hands-on stuff that you have to kind of figure out. So I was glad to get the experience, and I was glad that she pulled off the her first season pass. And Rich, I know you said you used to train Goldens. Bonnie is a 14-month-old field bred Golden, and she's the apple of my eye.
She marked
great. She didn't have to be handled on any marks. She did great with the walk-ups, walk-outs, diversion birds, and whatnot, despite, challenges. Some differences, some stuff that presented differently from, what we had trained. She handled most of that all well. We're excited about actually getting into actual hunting now. And as Dominic mentioned, next weekend she'll be getting to experience her first hunt as well. So I'm excited to see Bonnie and Sailor work together. And then we'll resume the whole hunt test deal in the spring when we have some tests closer by. March is kind of the next tests are in our area.
Yep. Well, you have to clean up all the stuff, the bad stuff that happens during hunting season.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
but you know what? That's what it's all about. Shooting ducks and picking them up.
Well, I know she's excited about it.
Yep. Well, with that being said, we appreciate all our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and give us a rating. If you're not already, we would love for you to subscribe. That way you can continue to follow along with all of our episodes. I mentioned our Instagram Live, so the podcast page is at Operation Gundog. I'm Dominic Moyo. My personal page is at the Puddle Hound, and John, you can find him at Bayou Gundog. If you'd like to give us a follow, go for it. The Instagram Live will be on one or all three of those pages, so keep an eye out for that. But we will also be trying to get the audio from that Instagram Live on a podcast episode that weekend as well. So we'll try to get that up for you. So if you're subscribed, you'll be one of the first ones to know when we have that posted up on whichever streaming service you're using. We'd like to thank all of our listeners again. Thank you, Rich, again for your time. We appreciate it all. And we hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed
hosting it. It was a pleasure talking with y'all. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.